on today's Run to the Top podcast.
Not to sound too morbid, but you can either be bitter and twisted and angry at the situation, or you can make the best of whatever time you've got left, because at the end of the day, you're going to die anyway. And I just went, I am going to be the best person I can be. I'm going to enjoy everything because I don't know what's left.
Yeah.
And even past the diagnosis, that's the way I look at life now. I've, you know, in kind of football or soccer, you know, you get your yellow card and then red card and you get sent off. And I say, I'm on my yellow card. I've been given a warning and I'm just going to, you know, make the best of it.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast, brought to you by runnersconnect.net. So last week we heard from Gretchen Rubin, yes, the best-selling author of The Happiness Project, and she had some amazing advice for us all on how to make little improvements to make our lives better, and I challenged her by making them into running examples. If you missed it and you enjoyed the Josh Trent interview, you really should go back because I think you're going to like this one. Today, I have one that's going to tug a little more on your heartstrings, but not in a like woe is me kind of way, but to show us, or should I say remind us, that life really is short and we just have to make the most of every single day. So my guest today talks about how she overcame cancer, how she says her life is better for it, even though she's missing 2/3 of her stomach and food has lost all of its joy for her. But she's learned so much about herself and learned to appreciate what really matters in her life. And it's just a wonderful story. So before we thank Saucony and Body Health for sponsoring this podcast, I wanted to let you know that we have officially launched the Run to the Top Extra Kick. I don't know if you remember, but I told you we would be launching a second mini podcast with your questions being answered. Well, it's now live and we called it Extra Kick. Get it? And I want to say a special thank you to those who helped us with feedback so we could make it the best it could be. You can find out more or submit your questions by visiting runnersconnect.net/daily, or you can email me tina@runnersconnect.net if you have anything you'd like to know that I can help with or just any other questions you might have. Jeff will be hosting the podcast, but I will be making appearances some week to answer your questions. So if you have something from me, I'd absolutely love to hear from you. So back to today, Hannah has an incredible story for us, but rather than me tell it to you, probably wrong, I'm going to let her share it in her own words. Are you ready for a powerful story? Let's get to it. I want to say a big thank you to Body Health for sponsoring this podcast and for helping me with my training over the last few years. You can enter to win a pack of 6 Perfect Amino bottles for free by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Thank you to Saucony for supporting the Run to the Top podcast. Running might be a low maintenance sport, but a good pair of running shoes is a must. Use coupon code TINA for 10% off at saucony.com when you pick out your next pair. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Hannah.
Hello.
It's nice to have you on, and you are yet another person who I am bringing on as you reached out to me. But this time, you actually found me through my personal blog. For those listening, I'm not sure how many times I've mentioned this before, but I do actually have my own blog, which is my name, tinamuir.com. And I share about my training and everything. And I don't think I've mentioned it properly for anyone who does want to follow, but Hannah reached out to me and shared her story with me, and I just thought it was amazing, and I thought you guys would really love to hear it, and she's definitely inspiring and just got a great story to tell. So I'm looking forward to diving more into this as we go. But before we kind of get into that, you know, you and I were talking just a minute ago about, you know, whether you ran or not before, but and you informed me that you were not a runner before all this happened. So maybe tell us about your previous history with, you know, were you interested in fitness? Did you do any sports in school? Just a brief overview of actually if fitness actually was in any way, shape or form in your life before the age of 27 when your life changed forever?
Yeah, well, when I was at university, I played rugby for the university team. Mm-hmm. That sounds a lot more impressive than it was. We weren't that good. But I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed the social aspect of it as well, probably more so than the actual rugby, to be honest. And then I tried to run a few times, and just it was hard, as I'm sure lots of people understand. And then the other thing that I'd always done quite a lot of, and I still love to do, is swimming. And when I joined a company in Glasgow, I met some girls who decided they wanted to do an open water swimming event called the Great North Swim, which is in the Lake District in the UK. And it's a 1 mile open water swim. And so we all decided to do that together. Mm-hmm. And that was me starting to kind of get more interested in fitness. And I started going to the gym to work out, to be better at swimming and to help that side of the training. Mm-hmm. And then that's where I started really using the gym and getting a good mental workout from that. It really helped me mentally. If I was having a bad day or things like that, it's the gym would be where I went.
Okay, so it already kind of got to a point to where you were starting to realize the benefits of it outside the obvious of, you know, keeping yourself healthy, which is actually the perfect kind of segue, because, you know, what we're going to talk about here right now, you're going to share your story, you know, perfectly healthy 27-year-old girl. So maybe tell us in your words what happened and just share your story.
Yeah, so like I said, I did this 1 mile open water swim, and then a couple of years later, I decided to do it again, and on my own this time. All the other girls that I'd done it with, one of them had had a baby and various life circumstances, it just wasn't right. So I decided I wanted to go back and do the 2 mile event, and I trained for that and did that. And, you know, so you can imagine, like you say, the kind of level of fitness I was at, and felt really good. And literally a month later, I'd had a bit of an issue with swallowing. It sounds really strange, but my food kept getting stuck in my throat to the point where I had to make myself sick to kind of get rid of it. It just wouldn't go anywhere.
Wow.
And yeah, it had happened for about a couple of weeks, and I went to the doctors for something else. And luckily, my doctor said, oh, is there anything else? And I went, oh yeah, there's this issue, and explained it. And she just said, well, I'm sure it's nothing, but you can't really live your life like that. That's no way to live. Mm-hmm. And she sent me for an endoscopy where they put the camera down your throat. And again, they'd said, yeah, it'll be nothing, nothing to worry about. I hadn't told anyone that I was going, because it was a routine test. And I was sitting in the hospital bed after the test, waiting to be discharged to go home again, because they'd given me a little bit of sedation just to help kind of, you know, relax you a bit, obviously, for having a camera down your throat. And the doctor came and pulled the curtain around my bed, and there was a nurse there as well. And they said that they'd found a 7.5 centimeter tumor.
Wow.
In my throat. And the literal words that the doctor used was, it looks nasty.
Wow.
And literally, yeah, my life just changed from there. And I went and had, days later, I had a CT scan and what's called a PET scan, where they use radioactive glucose to go around your body. And cancerous tumors are very hungry, and they like glucose, so that's how it shows up on the scans. And they use that for esophageal cancer. And it turned out I had esophageal cancer, and was told that this was in the September of 2012, and I was told that I wouldn't expect to see Christmas.
Wow.
So that was crazy to break to my parents, and like I said, and my friends and things like that, because when it all started, it was all very normal, and oh, I'm sure it'll be nothing, and all of a sudden it was something. The esophageal cancer is quite rare anyway. It tends to happen to about 4 times more men than women. And the average age to get it is about 65. and I was 27. And it's for people who've smoked and drank all their lives generally. And I drank alcohol at university, as people do. Mm-hmm. I don't drink anymore, but I've never really been a big drinker. I would more socially drink. And I did at university, I smoked, but again, I didn't smoke all day, every day. I would smoke on a night out and then wouldn't touch another one until the next night out.
So
I was a big shock to everyone.
So how did that make you feel when you were, you know, I mean, I'm 28, so this is pretty easy for me to kind of, relate to. And, you know, we kind of think of ourselves as like invincible, and especially something like this, where you said it's mostly, you know, older people who have, smoked and drank their whole life. Like, how did that make you feel knowing that, like, whoa, I am not invincible. You know, this did happen. And kind of, I mean, what was going through your head when they kind of told you that?
I don't really know. A lot of it is a blur. I think I kind of went into what I call my blinkered mode. It was tunnel vision. It was, right, let's get to the next appointment. The first very clear memory I have of it is when you know that there's something inside you that shouldn't be there. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to rip my chest open and claw it out. That was, and it was very, very hard when they were saying, no, you need chemo because we need to shrink this down because it's too big to operate on. We don't know if we can operate on it. And to kind of get your head around the fact that it had to stay there for a while, mm-hmm. I feel very, very lucky in the sense that in the April of that year, I read quite a few blogs. And one of the blogs I was reading, they put a link to this other blog and they went, you know, if you ever need a bit of inspiration, read this blog. And it's a blog called Do Today Well. And it's about a woman in the US who's got breast cancer. And it was just kind of her story and her fight. And she's amazing. She's got this amazing spirit and amazing determination. And I was reading this blog and I was just in awe of this woman. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I could be that person. And then I got my own diagnosis and I just made a very conscious decision. I thought, if I can be half the person that she is and have half the attitude towards it that she did, then whatever happens, I'll have done the best that I can do. Mm-hmm. And that was the other thought that I had, was basically, not to sound too morbid, but you can either be bitter and twisted and angry at the situation, or you can make the best of whatever time you've got left, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, you're going to die anyway. And mm-hmm. I just went, I am going to be the best person I can be. I'm going to enjoy everything because I don't know what's left.
Yeah.
Even past the diagnosis, that's the way I look at life now. I've, in kind of football or soccer, you know, you get your yellow card and then red card and you get sent off. And I say, I'm on my yellow card. Mm. I've been given a warning and I'm just going to, make the best of it and realize how amazing life is. And I think, like you said, at the age I was, I think you kind of get a bit complacent and you mm-hmm. start coasting and you do, you think you're invincible and you think you've got all this time. And I just feel incredibly lucky that I've had this experience to realize, do you know what? You don't. And mm-hmm. you don't know what might happen. And so just live every minute. And it's very hard to get down when you've been in the situation that I've been in, because you just, everything's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. And so you went through 9 weeks of chemo and then, you finally yes. were told you could have the surgery. You had the surgery and then another yeah. 9 weeks of chemo. During that yeah. time, like you said, you'd kind of decided that you wanted to make the most of your life, like however long it ended up being. But were you kind of at that point, like, I'm going to change my diet. I'm going to change everything I can. I'm going to be the healthiest person I can be. Or was this kind of later where you thought to yourself, okay, now I've got through this. Now is when I'm going to make the change. But when was it that you kind of realized?
During the year, it was basically my opinion was I'm going to do everything I can do. Mm-hmm. Doctors are doing what they can do. And I just need to kind of help them out. They're dealing with very serious operations and giving me this chemotherapy, which, you know, in the UK and the NHS is free. So I didn't have any money worries in terms of my treatment and things like that. And mm-hmm. they're doing the best that they can do. So I just decided that I would do as much as I could to help them, which included eating the right things. You know, a lot of what I eat now is to do with cancer fighting.
So what would be some examples of that?
Broccoli, anything high in antioxidants. Okay. So green tea, blueberries, tomatoes are very high in lycopene, which apparently has been found to help fight cancer, particularly cooked tomatoes. So whereas sometimes I might have had pasta with a creamy sauce in it, now everything's in a tomato sauce. Tomato-based things. So I don't know, everything kind of leans towards that. Mm-hmm. And if there's anywhere that there's something that's stated can help that, even now, 3-4 years down the line, I still kind of go, right, I'll eat that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the, I mean, obviously chemo is very intense on your body. So I'm guessing, you know, the fitness side of things kind of had to wait, but how did you approach that with, you know, you started to look at, you know, triathlons and running and things like that. Did that kind of become a goal for you? Like once, like if I get through this, I'm going to do this and that, or how did that come into it?
Yeah. So I'd always had, as I'm sure most people do, they, you know, a bucket list or a wish list or things that you'd quite like to do. And again, as most people, they tended to get pushed back behind everyday life and, you know, things just kind of take over and the next thing you know, you blink and it's Christmas and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I'd actually written them down as a list. But again, like I said, they were in a folder on my phone and they'd kind of been forgotten. And while I was going through treatment, I just went, right, this is going to become a to-do list. At the time as well, there's quite a high rate of recurrence for my type of cancer. Mm. So again, it was like, even if I get through this, it might come back. So I just was determined to make the most of it. And not all the things were fitness related. One of them was to buy a house. Another one was to take my mum on holiday. I wanted to swim with dolphins. I'm an engineer and I wanted to go and work offshore just because I wanted to see what an offshore oil rig looked like and things like that. And I've just made it my mission to systematically go, right, what can I do to get to that next point? Mm-hmm. And there were two pieces on my list, particularly. One was to do an Ironman triathlon and the other one was to run a half marathon. As I'd mentioned before, I'd tried running before. Other people had run before. My brother had done a half marathon before and I'd tried and I just thought I was never going to be one of those people that mm-hmm. could run. And so this bit on my list of do a half marathon, I just never thought I would do it. And so then when I was getting better and looking towards, right, what's next? Because as you can imagine, your life changes completely. Mm-hmm. I then systematically set about, right, how do I achieve these goals? So I started running and I started going back to the gym once I was allowed and working out. And it was like, right, well, let's do a 5K. Now let's run a 10K. Now run a half marathon and let's join the triathlon club and mm-hmm. let's do a sprint triathlon. And, you know, and I've done a sprint triathlon and, well, a couple of sprint triathlons and I've done an Olympic distance triathlon and you know, so I'm kind of systematically chipping away to get to the bigger goals while obviously appreciating the smaller steps along the way.
Mm-hmm. And I want to go into those running goals and kind of how people kind of treated you as well, because I'm curious to hear about that. But before we move on, just one more thing about, so you had this surgery and, you know, you now have no stomach, or maybe you can explain, you know, what kind of happened with that. And one of the things that really caught my eye about your email was, well, two parts. One was that you shared some funny things that happen when you don't have a stomach, which maybe you could kind of share some of those with people to kind of lighten the mood a little bit. And then the second one that you said, which yeah. really caught my eye more than anything, was that you said, you know, you have no appetite, you used to love food, and you could never believe those people who said they forgot to eat. And I've always been of that way. Like, I, like when people say, oh, I forgot to eat today, I'm like, what? Like, how's that possible? Because I'm always thinking about my next meal as soon as I finish the last one. So maybe you could kind of share those parts of things, like how your life is different now. And, you know, just some of the like little funny things that happened and also some of the things that you miss.
Yeah. So my operation, long term, I think it's called a partial gastrectomy and esophagectomy, which means that I had about 2/3 of my stomach, of the top of my stomach, and 2/3 of my esophagus or my food pipe removed. And then the bottom part of my stomach was pulled up to meet up with what remained of my esophagus. So now my stomach is less of a bag and more a tube. And actually the stomach part pretty much sits between my lungs. It's kind of right, it's high up in my chest rather than being further down like most people. As part of that surgery, they remove the vagus nerve, I think it's called, to my stomach, because it goes into the top half of my stomach, I believe, which then creates a complete disconnect between my brain and my stomach. So my brain no longer knows what's in my stomach. Mm. And that's, like you said, I now don't ever get hungry or thirsty, ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, when you sometimes like you wake up in the morning and your stomach's painful because you need to eat your breakfast or whatever. I just never feel those hunger pangs at all. At the beginning, when I first had my operation, and afterwards, I had alarms on my phone to remind me to eat because I would just forget, because I just don't have that stimulus. And still, it hasn't come back. Some people, it does return in some form, but for me, it hasn't come back. And my specialist has kind of said, now 4 years down the line, it probably won't. Mm-hmm. But I now have to. It's very strange. I have, you know, a very strict routine of when I eat and how much I eat. And obviously I have to eat very kind of controlled portions. Mm-hmm. And particularly when working out, thirst is the main issue I've got. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, I just don't get thirsty. The first sign I get that maybe I need to drink something is a really dry mouth. And obviously that's probably way, way too late. But drinking, like you said, the kind of, I say the funny things, I find them quite funny, but so because they removed the top half of my stomach, I don't have a valve at the top of my stomach to basically stop the contents of my stomach from making a reappearance. And when I did London Triathlon last year, I stupidly came in from the swim. And I got my wetsuit off and I thought, right, have a drink, you know, need to remember, have a drink. So took a couple of mouthfuls of water and then bent over to do up my bike shoes and re-caught all that water back in my mouth again. So, that's been quite interesting. Again, if I take a drink while I'm running, it bounces up and down, is again very interesting and not a very pleasant feeling, but drinking and fueling while doing half marathons and things like that is still interesting. I'm still working it out. I'm still trying to work out how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And my coach was horrified to discover that I'd got through London Triathlon, which took me 3 hours, 14 minutes. Mm-hmm. On one pear drop, which is like a boiled sweet.
Yeah.
Which he frequently tells me that will not work in a half Ironman triathlon.
Absolutely.
not going to work. So.
And it sounds like you have a good relationship with him from what you said to me and, you know, what you've kind of displayed there. And I'm sure he has to be quite understanding with you, but like, I'm sure you joke around with him and stuff. Have you found like having a sense of humor, like helped you along the way? Do you think that was a part of why you were able to kind of keep in a positive mood most of the time? Because you were able to kind of see that, you want to live your life as best you can, like you said, but maybe having a sense of humor and laughing at the funny things about this has actually, helped you to kind of stay in a good mind.
Yeah, definitely. I just think if you can't laugh about it and keep positive, then like I said, you know, you can either go through life bitter and angry about it, mm-hmm. or you can make the most of it. And at the end of the day, that you're going to have the same outcome as everybody ends the same way. And so I always wanted to have that attitude. Luckily, again, as well as my coach, but my surgeon that I had, he's amazing. I mean, obviously he saved my life, so mm-hmm. I think he's a pretty good guy. But he was brilliant like that. So, you know, the night before my operation, he'd come in and he was like, "Oh, I've got the cream cakes on order for you, you know, because you'll need to try and get that weight back on again." And he went, "I hope you've cancelled your Weight Watchers subscription." And what was the other thing he used to say? Oh, he used to say, you know, you've gone a bit severe with your way to try and get a gastric band on the NHS, haven't you? You know, you could have just asked, it's fine, you know. And so we had that kind of relationship as well.
Yeah.
You know, because I think the operation's very serious anyway. It's 11 hours and not a lot of people make it through. I think more to do with the fact that they're older than I was and not as fit. Mm-hmm. But at the end, you know, there's still a lot of complications that can happen. And so you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, if you don't have the operation, then you're going to die because you've got cancer. And if you do have the operation, you might die. So you've got to see the good side and you've got to be positive and, yeah, just have a laugh about it because there's nothing else you can do. It's not going to change the situation. So I just try and see the funny side of things.
No, I think that's really good. And I think it's something that is probably good for people to hear, including myself. Like, you know, and that's maybe, I was going to talk about this a bit later, but maybe we can discuss it now of like, you know, you've said about how you have these goals and these things you wanted to do and you kind of built up nicely with it. Like, I'm sure this is the case, and I feel like I would probably be guilty of this. Like, people must want to kind of wrap you in cotton wool. So, you know, how did you handle, you know, people kind of being overly cautious with you? And did you get frustrated with people being like, you know, are you sure that's a good idea? Did you get a lot of that?
Yes, in the beginning I did, with my family in particular, which is completely understandable.
Yeah.
They'd seen me, they probably, you know, because I was looking from the inside out, they probably saw more of it than I did externally, and they probably saw just how ill I was. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of perspective on that because I was adamant that I didn't want photos taken at the time. You know, I went bald and I just didn't like it. Now I'm kind of regretting that, but at the mm-hmm. time, obviously, I stand by my situation. And The main thing I did was I went to my surgeon, because I have regular checkups with my surgeon and my oncologist, and I put a pen and paper in front of him and I said, right, what can I do when, in terms of the gym and getting back into work and getting back to fitness and where I could go. For example, one of the places I wasn't allowed to go while I was having chemo was the swimming pool, because if you imagine, there's kids and it's a warm, wet environment. And when mm-hmm. your immune system's compromised, that's really not a good place to be. So,
yeah.
You know, things kind of grow and multiply very, very easily in the swimming pool. So, I just had to convince my family and my friends that I wasn't doing anything that medically somebody didn't tell me to do. And I'll be honest, the chemo, particularly the one after my operation, I think because I was so weak after my operation, it really took it out of me. And I was just so happy for any step I could take to, mm-hmm. to feeling better that, yes, I was a little bit frustrated and I obviously wanted to steam through it at 100 miles an hour, but then it had taken so much out of me. I was very, very aware that if I pushed myself too hard and was stupid and then, for example, I don't know, the cancer came back or I got some secondary illness because of that, then that's all on me. And so I just made sure that people really understood that, yes, I appreciate what I do. Even now, people think I'm a nutter. but, you know, I'm sure you get it as well with all the training you do, and you know, you do that for fun, really. Mm-hmm. But I did come eventually to the understanding with my family that this wasn't anything that I wasn't allowed to do, and that my okay. surgeon, you know, and I had discussed it with people first, you know, mm-hmm. and I think they just had to trust that I was telling the truth.
And what would you say then to, you know, any family members who are listening, who maybe have someone in their family who is going through something like this, to recommend to their loved one that they get a similar thing? Like, this is cleared from a doctor, this is what it's okay to do, and then just kind of trust them and trust that the doctor is the person that knows. Is that what you would suggest?
That's what I did. I very, very quickly, when I got the diagnosis, I Googled my disease once, and I'll tell you now, the statistics are horrendous. And so then I just went, nope, I'm not going to Google anymore. And I just put my faith and my trust in my doctor. I mean, obviously, if you're in that situation and you just generally have a gut feel that they've got something wrong and you want a second opinion, then that's completely different. But it was mainly my surgery went right to my stomach. It's commonly known as the shark bite operation, because I have basically an upside down smile right across my stomach. Mm-hmm. It looks like I've had a with jaws, which I do. I'll be honest, I sometimes tell people that because it's way cooler than actually what happened. But yeah, so obviously I had a lot of abdominal work and stitches and that kind of thing, and that took a long time to heal. It actually came apart at one point, not from anything I'd done. That was another, my family did ask that because I'd already gone back to the gym by that point, and I had to have it repaired. But yeah, so I kind of said that to my doctor, and so he just went through the different exercises I could do. I wasn't allowed to run for a year after my operation, mainly because my surgeon explained how there's lots of bits missing. Mm. Now, I joke as well, I carry a donor card, but I do feel like that when I am gone, if they're going to cut me open, and there's just going to be an IOU because there's not much left there. But they can have whatever's left. But yeah, so everything kind of needed to move about and get back into place again. So I wasn't allowed to start running for a year. On my 1 year anniversary, you bet your bottom dollar I was on the treadmill, and aww. I kind of, you know, my run walk started that kind of thing. But yeah, I would just say that you've got to trust. And I think after my illness, I'm very, very, very aware of there's pushing yourself to find where your limits are, and there's being stupid. And mm-hmm. yes, I want to get to my goal and things like that, but ultimately the biggest goal for me is to be healthy and to be as fit and healthy and the best person I can be. You know, I said very early on that if I get through this, I'm going to come out of this better, and I'm going to be a better person, but fitter and healthier, and just more conscious of what I do and the life I've got left.
Yeah.
And I think I would think that anyone in a similar situation would feel the same way, is that you, at the end of the day, you just want to be healthy.
Yeah, no. And it sounds like, you know, one of the questions I was going to ask you was about how you kind of found the balance between like getting back out there and, you know, pushing yourself too hard. But I mean, I don't even feel like I need to ask you that question, because what you said right there and just kind of what I've got from the rest of this conversation is that we don't need to ask you that, because you've kind of already done it. And like you said, you know, your doctor is the overall ruling decision here, and you have to trust them. But at the same time, like you said, your goal wasn't to absolutely deplete yourself in some event. It was to be the healthiest version you could be. And I think at the end of the day, yeah. You know, running is great for us. We know that. But sometimes what we do, and I will be the first to admit, the level I run at probably isn't the healthiest because of what I put my body through. But it sounds like you're using running for the way you should be actually using it, which is to be healthy. And you know, it's been great to kind of see your progression as you started working out and running as soon as you could, being the day of your 1 year anniversary. But then you even made big improvements from 2015 when you did the few triathlons, the half marathon. And then the next year you ran 16 minutes faster in that half marathon. So was that just that you were able to train a bit better, or was it that you kind of learned what your body could and couldn't handle? Like, how did things change during that year?
I think it was a bit of both, to be honest. Okay. With any kind of digestive operation or disruption, my surgeon always said, like, your digestive system is amazing at changing and adapting to the way it needs to be. So mm-hmm. obviously my digestive system has had to adapt massively. But in order to do that, it creeps. It's very, very slow at changing. Mm-hmm. And so the first 2 years after my operation weren't pleasant, I'll be honest. I had a lot of side effects and there's a lot of pain involved. It's a tough road. And I say that to other patients. I'm on a forum and people say, you know, it's 6 months and I'm 6 months post-op and I'm still getting this. And I'm like, 6 months is early. It's really, really early. Mm-hmm. And so things have kind of plateaued out and I've got to what I call my new normal. And I've just got a better understanding of what I can do in terms of what I can eat. There's a lot of things I can't eat now, which again, it's interesting for endurance events in terms of I can't really eat fatty foods because that upsets me. I can't eat sugar because of the nerve missing. I now have reactive hypoglycemia, where basically my pancreas sits there doing what it needs to do for a while and then suddenly decides it wants to do some overtime and pumps out a whole heap of insulin, and I have a hypo where my blood sugar drops really low.
Wow.
Sometimes that's caused by, strangely enough, when I eat sugar. If I eat anything sugary, my pancreas goes, there's loads of sugar, because it doesn't know how much there is because of this, the nerve disconnect, because my brain can't tell my pancreas how much sugar is in my stomach, and it just releases a ton of insulin, and I, ironically, having eaten sugar, get really low blood sugar. And then I, again, have to eat sugar because I've got low blood sugar. And then it all kind of starts all over again. So for me, kind of running and things like that, I can't have gels. I've tried them. I hypo. And I can't drink a lot because things bounce and it doesn't feel very good. I can't eat a lot. Simon, my boyfriend, finds it hilarious if we go out to eat at a restaurant. And sometimes I'll eat a little bit too much. Or a little bit more than I should, which is generally about a half portion, like a starter size or an appetizer size portion, which is that's generally what I can handle now.
Mm-hmm.
But because my stomach is between my lungs, if I then try and walk after that, I sound like a granny because I can't breathe properly because I've got a full stomach because it's all in the same space. So Simon thinks it's hilarious. And then, yeah, so I've just kind of, it's knowledge of what my body can do now. And then the other huge improvement I had was working with my coach, Matt. He's amazing. I do one personal training session a week with him, and that's kind of strength and conditioning work. You'll know all about that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know, weighted lunges and step ups and
yeah.
run mechanics, you know, anything that'll help with the run mechanics of it. But he also does my programs, and he's really, really good at what I kind of say, looking from above. When I'm training, I'm kind of right in the middle of it, and I can't see why I'm doing a certain training session when I am doing it, or, you know, why I should be going at the same pace, at a certain pace or whatever like that. But also he's very, very good at balancing my workouts and knowing when I'm fatiguing, or, you know, knowing when I should be backing off and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
He's also really, really good at the nutrition side of things. So we're trying to work out how to get me through a half Ironman.
Yeah, and you did mention that to me about, you know, obviously you've mentioned some of the complications and you're trying to figure out this fueling situation. So I will say to anyone listening, you know, you've heard Hannah's story and you've heard kind of what the problems are here. So if you have any suggestions, maybe email me tina@runnersconnect.net and I'll pass your suggestions or even your email along to Hannah and see if we can get this figured out for you, or if, you know, between you and your team, you can kind of get it together. Because yeah, I mean, a half Ironman, and eventually if you said you'd like to do an Ironman, that's definitely going to require some kind of planning, and want to make it a good experience yeah. for you as well. And then, you know, you said you like a challenge. I just wondered, has that always been the case? Or was it since the diagnosis that you kind of decided that, you know, you wanted to, you know, be the best that you could be? Or have you always kind of given it your all when you approach something new?
Yeah, I've always tried to. I mentioned before, I'm an engineer. I've always been a bit different. I've always liked doing things that not many people are doing. And obviously being a female engineer is definitely different.
Yep.
I've always had the opinion of I'll try anything once, you know, I'll pretty much give anything a go. But like I said, I had dreams and goals and they kind of got pushed to the back. And then when I was diagnosed, I was like, no, right, this is what you want to do. And I do, you know, I want to be someone who says they've done an Ironman. It might be the case that I might need to just turn around and go, do you know what, with my situation, I can't do it. And that's going to be tough, but it's fine, because like I said, I'm doing it to be healthy and fit. Yep. I don't want to kill myself doing it. So I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to try and see about this half Ironman. I'll be honest, the other thing that puts me off a full Ironman, and I don't know how you do it, is training for a marathon. I just don't know. The thought of going out and running for 4 hours makes me feel a little bit sick. So I might just, again, might get to the point and go, do you know, I'm not going to enjoy this. And once mm-hmm. again, after everything I've been through, there's pushing yourself and there's just doing things you hate. And I'm not going to fill my life with things I hate. But the actual triathlon and the triathlon club I'm a part of and the training that I do at the moment, I love every minute of it. So well, not every minute of it, but, you know what I mean? In general, I love it. Like I said, I might get to the half Ironman and go, no, this is it. This is where I want to stop.
Yeah.
But dream big. And then if you hit somewhere in the middle, that'll be all right.
Yeah. And you said about, you know, the whole marathon thing, you know, the idea of training for it just doesn't sound fun to you. And actually, it's interesting. Yeah. By the time this goes live, there will be an episode with Rob Wilby, who is encouraging people to try a triathlon for a new challenge. And he talked about how, yeah. you know, if you're doing the triathlon training, you can get away with a lot less running, especially if your body can't handle the impact. But would you say, you just made me think about, would you say that you live your life kind of more, you know, if you enjoy something, do it. If you don't do it. Rather than, I think a lot of the time we kind of get caught in, I have to, or I need to, rather than actually like, am I enjoying this? Yes. Okay, I'll keep going. Or am I not enjoying this? No, I'm not enjoying this. Well, I'm just going to do it anyway, because I don't want to not do it. Like, do you find you go by what you actually, you live a more fulfilled life because you're actually listening to what your heart is telling you?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of things that have changed in the sense of, yeah, like you say, if you don't like something, change it. And I make that sound very easy, and I appreciate that it's not very easy. And I've had very hard decisions to make in life because of that. But at the same time, you only get the one. And as I found out, you just don't know how long it's going to be. So I just don't fill it with stuff that you don't enjoy. I know there are aspects of life that everyone has to do that aren't very enjoyable, and that's different, but don't fill your life with things like that. For example, one of my friends that I used to go to school with, we'd kind of lost touch over the years, but then I'd seen on Facebook she was diagnosed with cancer. And I just kind of reached out to her again and said, look, I don't know if you know my story, but, and we messaged and things like that, and she's through it and she's doing amazingly well. And she was saying to me, oh, you know, you're amazing doing all this stuff and I need to get to the gym. And, oh, I just don't like it. And I was like, well, don't do it then. Just that's what I love to do. And that's what makes me happy and gives me fulfillment. But you know, if you love to bake, bake. If you like knitting, knit. If you like sitting in a corner and reading, if you, you know, just find what you love to do and make, you know, build your life around that.
Yes.
Because it's too short.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't. So, and I don't want anyone to think that, I don't want people to feel sad, because strangely enough, like, my experience with cancer was probably one of the best experiences of my life. Obviously, I'm coming out of it on the good side of it, but my life is infinitely better after my diagnosis than before,
mm-hmm.
simply because I look at things and go, do I really want to do this? Yes or no? And I find out what I want to do, and I actually go out and get them, and I work out how to get there, and I do it.
I love that.
It's just amazing.
I love that. I love that so much. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's so cool. And just so good to hear. And, you know, I mean, even what you were saying, a lot of it sounds familiar to, you know, say running a marathon. You know, a lot of it, you said, you, in the moment, you're kind of like, oh, this hurts, I don't want to do this. But then once you get out the other side, you're like, wow, like, I learned so much about who I am and what I am. So, you know, a lot of it is kind of a parallel. And is there a reason for you that you felt like running and triathlons were kind of, you know, that was the thing for you? What is it about those two sports that meant so much to you?
I think from the running side of things, simply because I just never thought I would be one of those people, in inverted commas.
Those crazy people.
Yeah. The ones that get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym before work. I think running, because it is so visible, you know, with the mass participation sports, from being from the northeast of England, we have the Great North Run, which is the half marathon. And I knew people who'd done it. And I just, you know, like I said, I'd just always gone, oh, I wish I could do that. But I'm not one of those people. It's just not for me. So I like the running aspect from that point of view. From a slightly other side of things, when I was ill, I used to, before we moved into our new house, I lived in a flat, and just down the road, I'm talking, 100, maybe 150 meters, there's a post box, a mailbox. And when I was having chemo, I would try and get to this mailbox. And for the most part, I wouldn't make it, mainly for the fear of, I lived on a top floor flat, which was three flights of stairs up, and there wasn't a lift. And so I often had the fear of not being able to get back up the stairs. And so I would always set off back home again, maybe before I really needed to, just because I needed to get home, and I was scared to not be able to get home. And I remember the day when I could kind of get to the mailbox and back again, and then I would get a bit further, and I still very vividly remember the day that I managed to get to a coffee shop, and I texted my mum, and I was like, Mum, I'm having a coffee like a normal person. When I had, you know, when I had enough energy. And now I still live in about the same area, and I run past that mailbox, and I always look at it. I'll always remember it. And I just, so that running for me was just freedom, being able to get out and about. I'll admit again, with triathlon, it's probably me wanting to be a little bit different. And I actually quite like it when people are going, what the hell are you doing? You know, are you crazy? And I quite like that people think I'm a little bit mental. And so I think, you know, why do one sport when you can do three, one after the other?
There you go.
So
way to spin it. And I think we all kind of in a sick way like that as well. So you're not alone there, I'm sure. So before we get onto the final kick round, I just have one other thing. Is there anything you would like to say to someone who listening? Maybe, you know, someone listening has shared this with someone going through it right now. You know, maybe they're in the chemo stage, to kind of tell them that they can find strength, they can find their life again post-cancer. You know, obviously, if you, like you said, you end up on the good side of it, but say they are going to be determined to make it through, what would you like to say to them?
I would hope that my big thing for me was, I always thought that a positive mental attitude worked wonders. I don't know if it's true. I don't know, you know, I don't know if medically there's any research behind it, but my opinion is your brain is the only intelligent part of your body. If you give up mentally, what chance does any other part of your body have? And so I just think if you're in the right frame of mind and you're determined, then you can't help but come out of it better anyway. I would also say, with regards to chemo, I would take it a day at a time. Literally, I would count 24 hours. The other thing a really good bit of advice I got given by one of the nurses was to keep a diary, because chemo goes in cycles. So they'll give you your drug, you go downhill as the chemo kind of goes through your body and mm-hmm. destroys all the cells, including the cancer cells. They were my little soldiers, I called them, when I went in for chemo day. It was cancer fighting day. They were the good guys. I think that was the other thing. I always associated chemo as a good thing.
Yeah,
it can be seen negatively, but they're the good guys. They're doing the good job. So, you know, give them all you can do. And it goes in cycles. So like I said, it'll go through your body and then gradually you start to get a bit better. And then you get to the point where you're strong enough to get your next round of chemo. And that's why it goes in cycles. And so what I did was I kept a diary of how I was feeling on that day. Mm-hmm. So that then in subsequent cycles, if I was feeling, I can't do this anymore, I can't go on anymore, this is awful. And there were days like that. I could look back at my diary and go, right, this is day 11. I felt better on day 14. And then I was like, right, I just need to make it to day 14. It gets better after that. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really helpful for me, because they were my words. They were my experiences. You can look on the internet all you like, but that was my story. And so I found that really helpful for me, knowing when you could see the light at the end of the tunnel, really.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, Hannah. I'm sure that will be inspiring for many, as has the rest of this interview been. So we're just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, and then we will be right back with a final kick round. By now, you've probably heard me talk about how a Body Health Perfect Amino is the perfect blend of the 8 essential amino acids to help you build and repair your muscles, your tissues, and of course, improve recovery. I take it along with their Complete Plus Detox multivitamin, and during my recent marathon build-up, I took Perfect Amino a few times a day, which allowed me to bounce back from my workouts quicker and to keep training hard so I could have a good race in the fall, which is kind of important, right? Have you used coupon code TINA10 yet? The Body Health team would love to hear your feedback. Yes, another reason I love them. And you can share your experience with Perfect Amino through the show notes for this episode by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Oh, and you can enter to win a 6-pack worth $230 there too. So once again, that link is runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. I wish you all the luck. This is the time of year many of us commit to being better and doing what we can to reach our goals. For me, it's doing more stretching and mobility work, and you've heard me admit it here, so hold me to it. But once the busyness of life, the nasty weather, and the tiredness from training accumulates in our legs, that motivation slips away, and it can be really hard to get it back. Now, we could reward ourselves with food, but after all that indulging over the holidays, most of us probably need to work on making better choices. We all know that new running shoes or new running clothes have a bit of a power to get us excited about running again, especially if they look stylish. The Saucony Freedom ISO has become my new favourite shoe, not just because they're nice to look at, but because the Everrun sole gives back with every step. So even on my most tired day, I feel like I'm getting a little bit of a push from the ground. I absolutely love them, and I think you will too. So if you live in the US, make sure you use coupon code TINA to get 10% off your order at Saucony.com. All right, Hannah, just 5 more little questions for you. Starting with, this is going to be an interesting one, and maybe you've shared it already, but the greatest advice you've ever received?
I don't know if it's much advice, but my mantra now is... you're stronger than you know. I just think that everybody has it inside them. People have said to me, oh, I just couldn't have done what you did, and I couldn't have gone through what you did with the attitude you had. And I just think that's a load of rubbish. I think everyone has it, and everyone is stronger than they think that they can be. And when you need to be, you'll find it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I find really, I thought was really poignant to me was Matt, my coach, he said, don't let negative people affect you negatively. I'd had a person basically kind of make a comment about my weight and how I looked. And then because of that, I kind of, I'm ashamed to say it, but I kind of stopped eating because that's so easy for me. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, stop eating and I don't get hungry. So it doesn't really matter. And then I kind of had a bit of a vent at him, and he was like, well, who are they? They don't affect you. Don't, you know, why are you letting somebody that you don't even know that isn't important to you affect you so negatively and potentially destroy everything you've built and everything you've done?
Yeah.
And so I try and remember that if, you know, because you'll get those comments.
Oh,
and
of course.
You just, I still find it really hard. I do care a lot about what other people think of me, but you just have to kind of go, no, I know who I am and I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me, on behalf of most people listening, I'm sure are thinking this and can't actually say it to you, but you are an inspiration, Hannah. What you've done, what you've shared is amazing. So hope you know that. And you have a lot of fans here. All right. Favorite running book or blog?
Not so much running book, but triathlon books. I really like Chrissy Wellington's book. I think her determination and her drive is amazing, and her book's really, really good. Along with the Brownlee brothers. I really like those guys from the UK. A running book that I really enjoyed reading was 80/20 Running by Matt Fitzgerald. I don't know if you've read it. I found it really easy, really good as a newer runner, because you know you always feel like you have to go out really hard
and,
you know, you kind of focused on running fast and things like that. And I've always known I should slow my runs down, and Matt has always told me I should slow my runs down. But I think when I was reading the 80/20 running, I think as an engineer, I kind of got the processes and why that was so important. And so I thought that was really, really interesting. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. That's a great book.
Yeah.
And I will say that we did have Matt on the show to talk about that book a few years ago. So I will put a link in the show notes, which I haven't mentioned yet, at runnersconnect.net/RC145. Okay, Hannah, what would you like to tell a new runner?
It gets better.
Yes. Good advice.
you start out and you think, you know, you think you're going to run a lot further than you actually can. And then you probably get disheartened when you can't, and everything is so hard. And I just remember even the easy runs were feeling really hard. Mm-hmm. And I can still remember, you know, people saying, oh, when I've had a bad day, I go out for a run and it clears my head. And even when I was running, I was like, what? I can't, you know, that's never going to happen. Running's just really hard. And even to the point of looking around you and noticing your landscape and noticing the environment you're in, I was staring at my feet and, you know, trying hard not to be sick and trying hard not to stop and that kind of thing. But it does get better. But unfortunately, the only way to get better at running is to run. you can do all sorts in the gym to improve your strength. And as you say on your blog, there's lots of other things, aspects to it eventually, but actually you just need to put the miles in your feet.
Yep.
But it does get better.
Okay, good. Thank you. Very helpful and very true. And once you incorporate that 80/20 running, it will help a lot. Okay, what do you eat before? Well, other than a pear drop, what do you eat before a race?
Me and Simon have an inside joke. When I was ill, I pretty much lived on toast because it was the only thing that worked but didn't make me ill. And it's still pretty much my standby of, if I'm going to go out and do something and I want something that I know isn't going to upset me, I have toast. So before I did my half marathon, for example, a bit before the race, I had two slices of toast. And again, a little bit of a funny story in terms of working out me and my new normal, as I've said, I have one with butter and one with jam, because the little bit of jam gives me a little bit of sugar combined with the carbs, with the toast. But if I have two slices of toast, both with jam on it, then that's too much sugar and a hypo. So I've worked out that I have one of each and that works.
That's the so ultimate knowing your body. So you've perfected it. All right. Yeah. And finally, your favorite running product?
I have to say, being an engineer, I love my data. So I have a Garmin Fenix 3 multi-sport watch. And I, once again, having read your blog, I'm getting a lot better. I don't tend to look at my watch now, but I'm getting so much better at running by feel, unless I'm trying to hit certain paces. But I used to be so, again, as a new runner, I'd look at it all the time and I'd be so disheartened at my pace and where I thought I should be running and that kind of thing. And I've really learned, I don't look at it. And sometimes I'll look at it when it beeps and it tells me my splits. Sometimes I don't, but afterwards when I download it, I pour through my data. That's when I allow myself to kind of go back and look at it. So again, being quite a new runner and quite new into the sport and things like that, I'm still at the stage where if I haven't got data on it, it didn't exist. So I don't do any runs without wearing my watch. Like I said, I have got to the point now where I can not look at it, but it has to be on there and it has to be tracking it. Otherwise, it didn't happen.
Yeah. And I will say, even though I do talk on my blog a lot about this, and I will put a link in the show notes to that article that that Hannah's talking about. I will say that, yeah, once I get home, I always have my Garmin on. I always keep it there. But yeah, just the more you are able to not look at your watch, the better you will feel. Honestly, I believe that with my whole heart. And Hannah, it's great to hear that you've learned that too. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that as well, so other people can check it out. All right. So is there a best way for people to kind of follow along with what with your journey as you continue to move towards those long term goals? Or is it, or would you like people to just email you if they'd like to chat to you? What are your thoughts on how they can follow you?
Yeah, people can email me if they want to. I also have an Instagram account where I put a lot of my training and things like that up. And I'm Gutless Iron Girl. That's my Instagram name.
Yep. All right. I will put a link in the show notes to that. Yeah. And also I'll put, if you email me tina@runnersconnect.net, I'll give you Hannah's email. So, all right, Hannah, well, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your story and just for being a true inspiration. It's been amazing to hear it. And I'm sure everyone has enjoyed it today. So thank you and keep inspiring, keep raising money for, you know, the charities that helped you so much. And we look forward to following you in the future.
Thanks a lot.
It just makes you think, and I don't know about you, but that really hit home with me about what she said about doing what makes you happy. I think we could all work on that a little bit more, and we just get into the habit of doing things because we're so used to doing them, or we feel we need to, rather than actually because we want to. And you guys have been listening to this for a while now, although I guess not all of you, but some of you have. And I have heard from some of you, and I've had the privilege of getting to know some of you. But I really would love to hear from you if you haven't yet reached out. So if you could send me an email, tina@runnersconnect.net, with a little bit about you, maybe your running story, favorite race, favorite episode, just something. I'd really love to get to know you more. Next week, we'll be talking to Jay DeSherry. Yes, the Jay. We have had a lot of requests to have him on the show, and this one is not going to disappoint. So make sure you tune in next week to hear more. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time and I hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.